Hello, Stitchers. Welcome to Stitch Please, the official podcast of Black Women Stitch, the sewing group where Black Lives Matter. I'm your host, Lisa Woolfork. I'm a fourth-generation sewing enthusiast with more than 20 years of sewing experience. I am looking forward to today's conversation, so sit back, relax, and get ready to get your stitch together. Welcome to the Stitch Please podcast. I am your host, Lisa Woolfork. And as I say every week, this is a very special episode because this episode is actually being recorded on the day that Joann Fabrics has announced that it is filing Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And this gives me an opportunity to welcome Keisha Tanay, who is a sewist, is a lifelong retail worker, someone who observes and notices trends. She is also someone who is very interested in mergers and acquisitions and has been studying those things as well. So to be able to talk to a sewist who is also someone who is pretty adept at understanding just these kind of behind the scene kind of things that happen when a company files bankruptcy. And what does that mean? And what will that look like? And all of these different questions. And Keisha would be a wonderful person to talk to about that. So welcome so much, Keisha Tanay. Thank you for being on the Stitch Please podcast.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm so happy to be here today. I'm like really
excited. This is fantastic for me as well. So tell me, what is your sewing story? How would you describe your sewing story?
So I learned how to sew in high school in my senior year. I just needed a first hour because my mother was like, I can't drop you off at school anymore. My schedule changed. And I went to school and my classmate was like, we have a sewing class. And so my grandmother on my father's side and my great-grandmother, my grandfather's mother, they had a hand in fashion. And my grandfather's mother worked at a hat millery here in Detroit.
Oh, wonderful.
Yep. And so it's kind of in me. And so I started sewing, and that's when I knew, I'm like, I want to be a fashion designer. Like, I never knew. I knew I always was interested in business, but that was the moment that I knew I wanted to be into fashion. I've always been stylish, always reading magazines since seventh grade. So it's kind of always been there, but it was solidified.
Oh, that's fantastic. And so you learned to sew in high school in this kind of formal way. And did you have any interruption in your sewing from high school to now? Or has it been something that you've been able to kind of do throughout your time since you started learning?
I think I've interrupted myself. So I would do small projects. Lack of space kind of plays a part. But I really, before 2018, I really had like this fear. And I was like feeling inadequate and I didn't like telling people I knew how to sew because they immediately want you to fix stuff. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. So I wouldn't tell people because it gave me anxiety. And 2018, I kind of just had a moment where I shared on social media my machine and I immediately was like, oh. And then I just kind of was honest with myself. Like, I have a fear and I'm scared I'm not good enough. But if I wake up one day and I'm inspired, maybe I'll start. And 7 days went by and I have not.
I really love that you were able to affirm yourself. Because you had been saying, you had been worried, you had been afraid that you weren't good enough. Nobody else said that. Mm-hmm. Listen, I think if somebody had walked up to my friend Keisha Tanay and said, you ain't good enough, they should get a poke in the eye or a throat punch, something, because that's unacceptable. But we sometimes give ourselves unkindness that we would not give to other people. So I am really glad that you said, you know what? Instead of saying that I'm not good enough, how about I just pick up this sewing machine and start sewing and see what's up?
Yes, yes. And I've owned a machine since 2004. And so I've had her.
Tina.
And my grandma bought it for me for just randomly. It was like, oh, we're going to this hotel and they have a conference room.
Yes, we used to have something like that too. They would come and bring, they would have all these machines. They either were like old school machines or something like that, but it was a bunch of them. I remember that vividly from when I was, I think I remember this happening when I was in graduate school and they would be on the radio, come down to the so-and-so high school because the singer or whoever's going to be there and setting up there. So, that's what a small world. Well, so you've been sewing ever since. And in addition to sewing, You are also interested in business development. You've described the city of Detroit as a forgotten city. That was a phrase that you said. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what that means and how you're going to help us all remember Detroit?
So Detroit has had its time. I will tell you, 10 years from now, you're going to, at this point, maybe like 7, you're going to be like, that girl said Detroit was on the rise. We're a motor city. We're also known for Motown, but this is a car industry, also medical and business. So you don't really have that fashion aspect, but we are very stylish as individuals here. We have our own flair within music, within culture. And so that's not something that's been highlighted. And when you think of fashion, you think of New York, you think of LA, you don't think of Detroit. And so someone like me who has always gravitated to what I saw in magazines and people around me and my own personal style, I feel like I shouldn't have to leave my city to become the thing I want to become. I want to go to LA for college. It just didn't happen. But now I'm here and I can do this here instead of leaving and going somewhere else.
That's right. And part of what some of the vision that you're imagining is to create a kind of a sewing space, to create a way that you can be a resource for your community. And that sounds incredibly exciting. Can you give us a little bit of the vision that you have for this wonderful project?
Yes. So I made a vision board on my screensaver. So it's on my iPad, my phone, my laptop. And I want a fabric store because we have the big box, Joanne, which we'll get into. There's another smaller store, but that's it. We don't really have that access. So now I have to go online and something I need today. I can run a store and grab it. If I lose Joanne, I'm fearful in that way that I would have to now wait days. And we know once we stop the sewing project.
Yes, it can walk away. It can walk out of, I'm like, is this sewing project seeing other people behind my back? Because where is it?
Because where it's never getting done. So imagine having to halt because I can't have that instant gratification. And so
the question was your vision for the space you want to create. Oh, you mentioned a fabric store. You mentioned
the community sewing space. So how I see it, like a loft building, the bottom is that retail space, the fabric store, and above it is a sewing space, a community sewing space. And so people can come and they can actually start projects. They can learn how to sew because I know it's hard. Machines are not cheap. And even when they're the lowest price, they're not always the best. Domestic machines, they do have a timer on them. And so if I think about a girl like me who grew up in Detroit who didn't have access to that at all, or anyone who can help promote and kind of like curate a space for me to develop, I want that not only for adult people, maybe someone who's retired that's interested in sewing, and they're like, well, we don't have those things here, or a younger person who I can see myself in that's like, this is something I never thought of, but now I have this talent because sewing is a talent. Like, technology is a thing, but people still have to touch grass. You have to still touch fabric. And so that is something that is necessary. And I'm excited to me and my business partner to go forward with this. So I cannot wait until, I update you on.
I am very excited to have a follow-up episode talking about that and about that big grand opening and to speak with you about this vision and how you're getting a chance to walk in that vision and walk in that purpose. I'm so excited for that. For now, though, we're going to dive into Joanne Fabrics. Joanne Fabrics has been around as a fabric and craft store for about 81 years. It was the brainchild of German immigrants who, as two separate families, decided to name the fabric store for their two children, two daughters. One was named Jo and the other one was named Ann. That's how the name came about. It was some combination of the two girls of the family's names. And so I thought that was pretty fun. And now Joanne has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, which means that they will be reorganizing their financing. Can you talk about what it means for a company based on your opinion and experience? What does Chapter 11 mean? Is it the beginning of the end, or is it just a bureaucratic step that's not going to really affect us very much as customers?
So I would say that it is really hard, and because I don't want it to go away, but it also means that Joanne has accumulated a lot of debt.
Yes, I saw it was like $1.2 billion.
Yes. And so as they continue to do omnichannel, manage inventory, staffing, so many things. If they can no longer, companies that can't find themselves catching up, they have to file Chapter 11. So they most likely are asking to be saved. So a company could choose to save them, give them the money they want. But if that company is evaluating their debt, their bottom line, are they meeting last year goals? Because always in business is to beat last year. And if you can't beat last year and you haven't been beating last year, the chances of you giving us our money back is low. So they may be acquired by an acquisition firm that says, okay, we're going to take this on, and whatever they choose to do with it, we will know.
Now, let me ask you about this, this return on what it means to make money, make more money last year than you did the year before. From what I've been reading, that mm-hmm. is not what Joanne has been able to do for the last year or so, that they have lost mm-hmm. between 1% and 3%, I believe, in revenue mm-hmm. overall. In that they've been looking at that in the past, they didn't have anything as severe, but it has started to accumulate. Currently, the court is supervising how they are reorganizing their funds. Do you think mm-hmm. they will be able to move the coconuts around, or whatever you do when you have the shell game and you're moving things around? Like, will they be able to move things around in such a way where they don't have to be acquired by anyone, but that they can save themselves?
Yeah, I would say that would look like store closures. Ooh. Closing stores, maybe reconsidering the inventory. So purchasing this inventory to come in the store, because you can't control one thing. You can't control what the customers do when they buy and what they buy. That, well, the only thing in retail, I've known that the only thing they can control is payroll. And we know it's already hard trying to find help. Someone's at the counter, one person at the register. So if they're already struggling with help and employment to help the customers, which affects the customer experience. I think, too, that pushing online sales is also what's keeping people from going in. Because if I can purchase online or have it shipped home, there's no reason for customer, to go to the store.
That's right.
But customers like Keisha, I need to go to the store. I don't want online.
And it's interesting you mentioned that, because at our local store here, where we do have a Joanne, I went out there. Usually they close at 9:00. I've been in the city for 25 mm-hmm. years. They've always closed at 9:00. We got there at 6:45 or 7:00, and the store had been closed for an hour, and there was a piece of paper taped on the door that said this store will be closing at 6 p.m. until March 2nd or something like that. Like, but when I called, it said 9:00. And so that does become kind of frustrating, and it could be related to this issue. And I was wondering about how a store, in your opinion, if they are acquired, for example, by a venture capital fund, or if they're acquired by somebody who wants to sell it off for parts, what would one expect from that kind of outcome?
One, if the company is saved, so we're going to save it, but you have to close this amount of stores because we need to monitor the funds, you'll start seeing more stores closing. And so they will probably be liquidating all of the things in that store. Everything must go. Or they could pack up things and ship it off to other stores. A lot of times, too, with acquisitions is that you'll find companies that'll just close the doors. No notice. Sign on the door. This business is closed. And that's how employees find out. This really sucks for employees, because I know what it feels like to just find out in the news that the company you're working for every day showing up is not business. I think it would be more store closure, because to me, Joanne has a monopoly. And anyone that takes this on, it is a good deal, but it's going to require to scale back a lot.
Do you think that Joanne is in a position to be purchased by one of its competitors? Do you think that Joanne could be purchased by Michaels? I will not say that Holy Lobby is a competitor, but do you think that either of those places have enough funds to buy out what really is, for most people, like the only game in town?
Hobby Lobby, I don't know much about them. I'm not a fan. So they're so far out, too. Like, it ain't even worth traveling to be honest. Michaels, I think Michaels is struggling themselves.
Oh.
Any Michaels I go to, it is hard to find employees.
Wow. You know what? I had not been to Michaels in a minute, and I went there a few weeks ago to look for something in particular. And when I got there, they didn't have any registers for people. Hey, friends. Hey, I know you're enjoying the audio version of Stitch Please, and thanks so much for listening. But you're missing out on all the great stuff going on behind the scenes. That's why I'm inviting you to join our Black Women Stitch Patreon. For as little as $5 a month, you can see all the video versions of the podcast. Plus, you get some amazing swatch cards. You know how much I love these swatch cards. Look, look, see how cool these are? You can't see them because you are not yet on the Patreon. So when you join the Patreon, you'll be able to see this, me showing you these amazing cards. We also have some great perks at the other tiers, like discounts, swag, office hours, and more. Don't be the last sewist in the group now. Head over to patreon.com/blackwomenstitch or click the link in the show notes and become a Patreon supporter today. We truly cannot do this without you. So thank you so much. The entire front end of the store was all self-checkout. They had one register where I guess you could go to a person if you had to return something, maybe, but everything was self-checkout. And it was like very fancy. Like they did almost like a doggone full body scan. I thought I was at the airport. You walk up to the thing and you can see everything from your waist up to the top of your head as you are checking out your materials. And I'm like, if I'm checking out, I'm like, do I get an employee discount too? Like what? I gotta find the stuff, bring it here, ring it up and pay for it. Mm-hmm. Like, spoil me, please. Yep. Let me go ahead and just stand in a regular line with a basket. But, you know, that has become, I think, a way for people to save money.
Yeah, because the pandemic affected us so much that it's hard to find work. And so the example you gave of walking to a store that's closed, well, these companies know that it's already hard to find work. People are overworked. So they're like, right, we can't deal. Someone called off today. Back in the day, you couldn't close the store, though. I've worked in retail since 2002. You worked, the power go out, you in there. The storm is outside.
Wow.
You are in there. Active shooter, you in there, follow the hallway. But you don't just get to shut the store down and leave. Malls would be fine for that kind of behavior. So this has created a new culture where an employee who genuinely is struggling say, I can't manage this store. It's me. I have to shut it down. Or people take advantage and they may be like, I don't want to work today.
Interesting is I'm very curious to see how people might signal blame or responsibility. I think that maybe it's because a lot of women do the crafts that Joanne Fabrics and Craft talk about, you know, that a lot of women are sewing and scrapbooking and cake decorating and painting and, you know, et cetera. But I sometimes feel as though customers are meant to somehow accept the blame for corporate failures. That somehow it's people's fault. One thing strikes me in particular is the way that many of us, and by us, I will speak for myself, why I really enjoy the big five pattern sales. It used to be the big four. Then there was a new one added. Nomi has been added. And that makes it the big five, which is great, except that they're all owned by one single company, which isn't good for anybody. Why is that? I mean, really, I still can't get past the fact that Butterick, McCall, Simplicity, Vogue, New Look, Nomi are all owned by the same company. I think the only one that's not owned by them might be Berta. Germany, I thought. I don't know.
It's Germany, yeah.
I'm just saying, I don't want that. I don't want to, in the same way, I don't want all the airlines to become just plane, you know? You want to go somewhere? How are you going? Plane. I'm taking a plane. No. So for me, I am firmly believing that these patterns cost 99 cents or $1.99, or if it's Vogue, $5.99, but they've been inching up. It used to be $3.99, then $4.99, then $5.99. Mm-hmm. Soon it's going to be $9.99 and I'm going to be like, bye Vogue. I can tell you right now, I did not get that Eve's, what is that? What's that one everyone's loving? The DVF, the Diane von Furstenberg wrap dress pattern that's got the girl the girls fighting for their lives, because it's not on sale and it's not in stores.
I have two wrap dresses.
No, no, Keisha, you're supposed to have the one from Diane von Furstenberg that came out in 1970, so that it's, you know, 1974. So it's the 50th anniversary edition of this pattern. Do you have that one? Because you were supposed to pay full price for it. I did. I did not.
No, ma'am. Is that in the
book? I'm pretty sure it's in the book, but I don't think you can get it in the store. That's what I was told. But if you can, I think if somehow you can't use the coupon on it, it's something special. The specialness means I'm not getting it. Because, yeah, I'm like, I mean, wrap dresses are fine. That's great. But I'm not enough for me to like, you know, I must get this pattern. But
at regular price or 30% off?
Yeah, they're built in 40% off. I guess I'm wondering, do you have any insights into consumer behavior with Joann's in the last 10 years or so that might, I don't know, shape or, you know, maybe help them make some kind of good decisions perhaps about, you know, what they should be doing and where they should be drawing more attention?
You know, the culture and retail space is the customer is always right. Unfortunately, when the cat's away, the mice play. I will always say when it comes to a business failing, it is a conglomerate. Everybody is part of the issue. When customers are demanding for things to be cheap.
Yes. Yes.
Well, if you're always paying everything for little to no money, who is getting paid?
Right.
So people can't have a job because payroll can't be met because they're not making profit.
Right.
We're in the internet age, so the demand to shop online and not go into a store. Well, if you're not coming to the store and traffic has dropped significantly, then a store is going to look and say no, because they track these things. They track sales per hour and conversion, which is a machine at the door that counts you coming in and out. And they're looking like, you should be selling X amount of dollars per these many customers. And so when that isn't matching and then they're not meeting their yearly the bottom line, beat last year is more like meet last year. If you made $10,000 last year, you need to make $10,000.
Wow. Yes.
And so that 1-2% when you said that indicates that there's a chance that they're not completely losing money. They're just
yes.
They're just in debt. Debt is the real issue. The money they're getting.
Yes.
But they have taken on more than they can chew. So that consumer part is demanding. The coupons suck. They do. Indeed, they do. But also, Joann is a retail. So they're offering fabric and all items at a retail price. So we don't have wholesale. Like Detroit doesn't have wholesale. But if you go to New York, there's a fashion
industry. Right.
Chicago has it. Texas has it.
LA. LA has it as well.
LA.
Yeah.
Yep. And so when you don't have that, and I'm forced to go to Joann,
It's interesting that you mentioned about them, the traffic in stores with people coming in and out. Mm-hmm. I do remember reading in this, these are all Joann's giving these materials out. They were saying that about 95% of their stores are cash positive. They were saying that like, that's what they were saying. It said that 95% of their stores were cash positive. And I guess as a way to say they're not as bad off as they were before. I was surprised by this. And I'm like, if you're so cash positive, why are you doing this? But maybe it goes back to also being $1.2 billion in debt. So that might be, but I was really surprised by that. Does that surprise you that so many of the stores are doing well? And is it worth even speculating? Well, because they're doing so well, maybe they won't have to close any stores.
So when I hear that, I'm hearing that they are making money. And at some point in business, they borrow some money for maybe to buy inventory. And so they're buying this inventory. Maybe the buyers aren't making the best decision. Maybe they're not sourcing cheaper fabrics or more expensive. So the turnover, so their profit margins are higher. That's what it sounds like. Their cash flow is great because they're making money. I mean, I've gone to Joanne, there's people in
there. Yes.
Stuff can't stay on the shelf. I see stuff leave. I see this fabric. I come back. It is gone. But they, some point, borrowed money. I don't know if it was to buy the Eddie Bauer,
right,
the Josie Couture, right, the Lucky Brand with the Ditto machine, all of these. Also vendors, the Husqvarna.
Yeah, I think it is Viking Husqvarna that they partner with.
Mm-hmm. Yes. They got it, and not every store has it, but then they have that. What does that look like? So I think it's the in debt, because when I first read it, it said inventory. And so you're sitting on product that you need to be turning over, and maybe you're not turning over quick because you don't have better sales. Like, I'm going to be honest, the sales are bad. Sales are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that may be the main issue, because although there's fabric, there's also all this other stuff that Michael's, like you said, a competitor. Offers.
Yes.
Making cakes,
yes,
knitting,
yes,
yarn, mm-hmm, stickers, planners, mm-hmm, crates. The list goes on. All this stuff in here is like, why? Why do we?
You know, I don't. I think it makes sense to have yarn. That makes sense to me. Yarn makes mm-hmm, perfect sense. And even I don't know. I guess it's they're thinking about people who want to be creative, and so. Mm-hmm. The scrapbooking makes sense to me. The planner makes a little bit less sense, except when you remember that for some people, planning is their craft. So mm-hmm, you're buying your planner and buying the stickers, and there's conferences and get-togethers and meetups and organizations all about people and their planners. So mm-hmm, just like for sewing, it's a community there. I think some of the things that were always so head-scratching to me were just like, why are all these as seen on TV products here? Like, why is there a whole end cap for, I'm like, first of all, who is watching these things on TV anymore? Like, mm-hmm, I'm so confused. And so it felt very much like it was trying to, you know, pick up any little bit of, you know, last minute revenue, be it some snacks, yeah, which is weird. Why do you have snacks in the fabric store? That feels like a not great idea.
But candy, chips, it's happening.
Quite
right. Also, the decor, the holiday decor, is it necessary?
So much of it. There's so much. And it's like every, I think there's more holidays than there used to be. I feel like there's all these different fabrics that end up right at the, you know, at the back of the clearance section, you know, because mm-hmm, surprise, surprise, nobody's making like all of these things out of Valentine fabric. Like, you know, there's only so many pajamas you can make. If you had the chance to offer Joanne Fabric any type of advice, and this will be the slogan of the Stitch Please podcast, is that we will help you get your stitch together. And so I'm going to ask you, Keisha Tene, based on your retail expertise, as well as the interest that you have in acquisitions and corporate structure, what advice would you have for Joanne Fabric right now to help them get their stitch together?
Bring back the Joanne Plus program. I don't know why you got rid of it. It's absolutely insane. The fact that the employees had no idea what I was talking about. The fight at the register to scan a barcode is something I just can't, like, that experience that I have to do this thing with this employee who has no idea what I'm talking about. Bring back the Joanne Plus. I think it's imperative. They can't just offer retail, especially with fabric, right? They need to have wholesale. And having that on that side at some point, I think it's very valuable. Also, what's in your distribution center? Because I ordered something online. I asked for 8 yards. You promoted to me, gave me 20% off, and then you canceled my order. I need 8 straight cuts. I need 1. I don't need 2 cuts. I need 1. And so those kind of things I noticed were very problematic. And I'm like, this isn't working. I'll give buyers credit. The fabrics have gotten so much better. But it's very slow burning, and they need, in order to keep, you got to keep up the pace. It takes too long. But I think that's the biggest issue. Each store is different. I don't know what that's about, but there's no uniformity. The fact that I have to travel to 3 different stores to get all the things I need is very much insane. At this point, you do need to close those stores and narrow down. Because when I go on a Joann, I go on a Joann hunt. I go north, west, east, south, and I come home.
Wow. And look how fortunate you are that you have three Joanns in your region that you can even get to. That's amazing. I'm trying to make sure they hold on to the little old one we got right here. That would be awesome. But, oh, Keisha, yeah. Tanae, thank you so much for being with us today and to talk and talking about this with us. We are so appreciative of you and of your time. We wish you best of luck. Let us know where we can find you on the socials.
Yes, thank you so much, Lisa. I really appreciate it. Today was a great day to land in Clubhouse. And as soon as I saw you, I was like, Lisa, do you know, girl? Yes. Because who else am I going to geek out about? So, in my Insta story, I talk all things. I'm Keisha Tanae. It's spelled Keshia, K-E-S-H-I-A-T-A-N-A-Y. Keisha Tanae on Pinterest, on Apple Music. I'm not a tweeter. I don't really be on Facebook. And also SoapBombStudio.com. I am gearing up to announce my fashion house. So that will change. The Soul Bomb Studio is my business. I offer these headbands. I make them myself.
Beautiful.
And So that's where you can find me. And I do appreciate you, Lisa, so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you, too. This was just wonderful. Thank you for taking the time to share with us today.
You've been listening to Stitch Please, the official podcast of Black Women Stitch, the sewing group where Black Lives Matter. We appreciate you joining us this week and every week for stories that center Black women, girls, and femmes in sewing. We invite you to join the Black Women Stitch Patreon community with giving levels beginning at $5 a month. Your contributions help us bring the Stitch Please podcast to you every week. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. And come back next week and we'll help you get your stitch together.